In Plato's dialogues, Critias and Timaeus, he talks about a strange place called Atlantis. According to him, Atlantis was a powerful and advanced civilization located somewhere near the Pillars of Hercules, what we now know as the Strait of Gibraltar. It was ruled by a series of kings descended from the god Poseidon and was renowned for its wealth, military prowess, and sophisticated society. However, Atlantis became corrupt and imperialistic, leading the Athenians to defeat them in a cataclysmic war around 9,000 years before Plato's time. As punishment, the gods submerged Atlantis beneath the ocean in a single day and night. Given its legendary status, many moderns assume that Atlantis never existed. But has Atlantis been hiding in plain sight all along?
Yes.
And here's the answer.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Episode over.
Atlantis might even give us the mother of all mermaids. You don't like it. You love it. It's actually Brian's view.
I don't love it.
I'm skeptical, but disagree. It's Brian's official
view. Like on record, here's two things that I know for sure. Okay.
You ready? Water.
I need to know which camera I'm looking at here so I can make eye contact.
Go for the red.
The red one. Okay. Listen. Two things are sure. We know where Atlantis was.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
No doubt.
And number two, Joel is wrong about the mother of the mermaids.
Okay. Well, I'm not even saying it's my view, but I'll give it, you know. But number three,
are we just
primary
diving right in?
Water is legit.
Oh, yeah.
All number three, all three of us agree. Look, primary water is not even a theory.
We're
at
not
this
done.
Point.
Gospel of Jesus Christ, 100%.
100%.
It's not even close.
The number of times you guys have used
primary water
is making me uncomfortable.
Primary water, also 100%. Not importance, but same
we've learned
level of certainty.
Wait, you just went up to 100.
Yeah.
Well, and here's, I think we can add
certainty.
Right on.
We can add another thing we know. We could revive the city of Atlantis with a primary water well.
Which there is one in the middle of the city of Atlantis.
Well, and that's why it works in. So we're going to talk about primary water. Yeah. We're going to talk about mermaids some. We're going to talk about Nephilim, because I think Plato's conception of a king with 10 sons.
And indeed.
Definitely works in.
Indeed.
So all this is important. But first, we should start with location.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about why we're saying we know where Atlantis is.
Right.
Because like you said in the cold open, we have this it hangs by a thread, historically speaking, our knowledge of this place called Atlantis.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's really one historical account preserved like Ben described. And for most people that listen, they go, that's the end of the story. They speculate about maybe a few offshore locations, sunken cities, things like that, assuming it's out in the ocean somewhere.
There's the Atlantis of Japan,
the Yanaguni monument.
Or it's just completely made up. But what happens is that if you go to a little place called the Sahara Desert,
Mauritania.
Right in plain sight, but you wouldn't expect it.
And you start to lay out a certain set of facts around a certain location. You will not only, I'm convinced, anybody who looks into this,
not only
will you say, wow, that could be Atlantis, you will conclude that is Atlantis.
Right.
And then let me tell you, nail in the coffin for me, which I already was certain, but today it's just like,
it was another nail.
There actually is another historical account of Atlantis, which I did not know about until today.
From Herodotus.
And that is Herodotus.
The father of history.
The father of history. Yeah. Might want to hold on to that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Had compiled a map of the known world in his day. And down there, right where we
believe Atlantis
would expect Atlantis to be, he had labeled a little circle and he had written Atlantis. Atlantis.
Mm. So let me lay out a few facts.
And real quick, wasn't there also a connection with like a ruler there being Atlas?
Yeah, let me lay out a few facts.
I'm going
here.
Too fast. My bad.
And then you guys jump in. We'll fill it in. We'll get all of them by the end. So there's this place in the Sahara Desert, which first of all, you're like Sahara Desert. I thought we're talking about a sunken city.
We were talking about the underwater city.
We're talking about a place in Atlantis. It's called the Eye of the Sahara.
Yep.
It's a known landmark in this region that doesn't get a lot of attention because it's so far from any habitable place in any kind of tourist sort of location. People don't travel to it. But if you look at it from above, it's about a 23 to 24 kilometer in diameter.
Which lines up perfectly,
by the way,
with what Plato says.
Series of, in the center, there's an island, or what would be if you had water at a certain level. And then there are rings of land around it, which perfectly matches the description, and physical description.
Each of these rings are like mounds that would be above the water.
Earth,
you might mounds. Even call them, you know, because it's rings are like serpent mounds.
Yeah.
Like a, almost like a spiral.
It looks much
spirals
like
spirals are always positive.
And, and spirals are evil. We know this to be true.
And it's in a location.
Unironically,
but the middle would be above the sea level if there had been water. And each of these circles, concentric circles, would also be
would
above.
Would be at a same kind of elevation.
And there'd be water in between
and
each
the,
one.
And the number of rings for land versus water also match up to what Plato
three
said.
Three of two. So it's in a land that we call today Mauritania.
Yep.
Mauritania. And surrounding it, there are mountains called the Atlas Mountains. Now, Atlantis just means the city of Atlas.
Right.
That's what it means. And in legend, the original king of Atlantis was a man named Atlas.
Who was Atlas?
Atlas was a Nephilim.
He was a Nephilim.
I mean,
he
come
was
on.
The son of Poseidon, who was a fallen watcher, who literally, according to the legend, Poseidon takes to wife a mortal woman named Cleito.
And has 10
sons. The mother of mermaids.
According to Joel, the mother of mermaids,
The mother of Nephilim, but also mermaids.
And mermaids. They had 10 sons.
So anyway.
The first mermaid. Yeah.
10 sons who ruled the kingdoms.
Brian's position, not
who ruled the realms. And what's fascinating about this, so this is supposedly a legendary account here, but Mauritania has a people that are now known as more the Berber people. I think they became even Islamic at some point in later history.
They used to be called the Mauri people.
But before that, the Mauri people, and guess, Ben, just tell us, who was, according to their own history, the first king of the Mauri people?
It was a fella named Atlas.
Oh my goodness.
They say that their first king was this legendary demigod figure named Atlas.
Named Atlas.
And the ruler of the capital city of the Atlantean Empire, which was Atlantis, was Atlas, the Nephilim child of Poseidon and Cleito.
Their words.
Okay, so real quick. So do we have any documentation that says Poseidon was the father of Atlas?
Yes.
Tell me.
Well, like Homer.
Okay.
You know, Ovid in the Metamorphoses.
And Herodotus, say the guy, Herodotus, father of history. And how much does he predate Plato?
He predates Plato. He was—
because Plato's getting his conception from
Herodotus
him, right?
Died when Plato was 2 years old.
Yeah.
And okay. Herodotus came around about 200 years after Plato's great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Solon, who was the one who went to Alexandria—
Egypt.
And learned about this legend of
Atlantis. Learned about it from, which at that point supposedly
So Plato is actually 9, in the lineage of a guy who's before the father of history. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, you know.
Herodotus.
Herodotus, there we go. If you remind me each individual time I'm going to say it, that would be
just
perfect.
Just think of Herod and then Otis. Yes.
Herodotus. Beautiful.
You nailed it.
Right, but it's also because it's still fresh on my mind.
Yeah.
So give it 20 minutes and I'll be in trouble. But the point is, Herodotus is, that we're not talking about hundreds of years predating Plato, but Plato was actually 2 years old. But in Plato's lineage, not the father of history, in Plato's lineage, you've got back before Herodotus is
Solon,
and he went to Alexandria, and that's where he discovered the legend of—
And this was 2600
BC. Really, probably not legend. He discovered the history
of Atlantis.
He
received it from the Egyptian priest as history.
As historical narrative.
Yeah. This was in around 600-ish BC, 2600 years ago. So further, now this is a desert region.
Right.
Obviously, but surrounding—
Something happened.
The physical description Solon preserves— has many, many very specific and particular physical characteristics. It's surrounded by a mountain range on a certain side that has rivers running down into it.
The northern Atlas Mountains have rivers that come down.
River basins that are now bone dry.
Right, it's all
but
dry.
But clearly now. Carved out by rivers.
Yeah, they were there.
Out of the southern entrance now, then the water flows out. Clearly, this is exactly what we see when we look over this landscape. We see the landscape as well. Looks like it had been catastrophically deluged with extraordinary amounts of running water. I
Almost
can't think of a single event.
There was an event in history?
It's hard
to think of a single
lots
one.
Lots of water, quickly.
Let's see if we can get Ken Ham on the phone.
The timeline would add up. So when Solon came around—
That's a global flood.
Solon,
by the not way, local.
His nose flood.
Not local,
Gavin,
but global.
Sorry,
Portland, hardest hit.
Hardest hit.
Solon said that, I believe it was 9,000 years before his time.
Yeah, which would have been about 11,000 something.
Right, which I doubt those— I doubt those numbers as completely accurate, because I think that the Bible is right about how holy the earth is.
3,000
The fact is, it was a long time before Solon, who was a long time before Plato, who's a long time before us. And so it's very reasonable. And I genuinely mean this. Yeah. It's going to sound like I'm joking. It's very reasonable to say that Atlantis was an antediluvian, a pre-flood city.
That's all that means, pre-flood.
Ruled by a Nephilim king that was highly advanced.
Yeah. And real quick, Nephilim, what we're saying there is Atlas would be the Nephilim king.
Atlas was the Nephilim.
And to be Nephilim, that means he had a human mother who married and procreated with a fallen angel father. Yes. That would be Poseidon.
Poseidon.
Some of these fallen angels, we believe that they were princes, spiritual princes, rulers, given dominion over principalities. The principalities are not a thing, but rather a place. Think of principalities in the same way you would think of provinces in Canada or regions or states. And some of these might not just be on land with nations and peoples, but oceans, water, certain topography and things like that. So what if one of the fallen angels, watchers, that rebelled against God, came down to earth and is a prince over a particular principality? His particular principality happens to be over water, in a land region on the coast. At the time, it was on the coast, had access to water. The city itself was, water was a big part of it.
It was said to be a very important port city.
Very important history, port city. And so this is Poseidon. And that he actually does have power over wind and waves, not to the degree that Jesus, who is he, the disciples say, who can command the winds and waves and they obey him. But we know that Satan in the book of Job had authority to cause a great wind to make the house of Job's children collapse from a wind, nature, a wind, and kill them. So it's not that Jesus alone, that God alone has power over wind and waves. He has the supreme power over wind and waves. So the idea that one of these watchers, fallen angels, over a particular reason, a region, a port city dealing with water, and that fallen angel would be a water type power over waves and water, Poseidon, and that he marries a human woman and has a half fallen angel, half human child that becomes the king of the city, Atlas.
Who then has 10 sons.
No. It was... Poseidon and Cleito had 5 sets of twins.
And Atlas,
He's one of them.
Atlas was the first out of the womb.
He's one of them, that's right.
And he was set over Atlantis, the capital city.
Because it was the whole region.
Right,
it
was an empire.
Yes, that's
right.
And
then the other 10 sons ruled different regions of the Atlantean
empire. And just to finish spelling it out, just because
we know this for
because
sure.
Brian wants his view to be communicated as well. So with all that, the fallen watcher, Poseidon, perhaps the same individual known by the Philistines, and I'm not saying it has to be the same, but it's possible the same. That's known as Poseidon in some mythology. Greek mythology is this fallen angel, known to the Philistines as Dagon.
To the Romans as Neptune.
Yep, as Neptune, exactly. So this is real. The biblical account actually, the biblical narrative accounts for this. And then, the wife, the human wife, Cleito. So now this is the last part that I personally am skeptical of, but Brian believes it 100%.
Again, exact opposite of what he just said.
I'm glad that everyone knows that I don't think this is legit.
But it's worth mentioning. Okay, so I don't believe it 100% either. I'm joking about Brian. He doesn't believe it. I think that it's within the realm of possibility, but I'm not even giving it 50%. But Enoch says, now Enoch is not canon, and it's not just because of Constantine and the Council of Nicaea cheated. I think there are actual reasons. I believe that we have the Bible. God didn't make a mistake. The same Holy Spirit who inspires the writing of the text preserved it. That this was supernatural. That there were wicked men who would love to corrupt it, but God didn't let them. So my trust is not in men. My trust is in God preserving his word to us for these 2,000 years. Praise God. So Enoch, although it's not infallible, inspired, canonical text, you still have Peter and Jude. You have biblical authors in their biblical text that is inspired, reference it as credible.
About this situation, about the watchers and the Nephilim.
Exactly. Now, they don't reference it about the mermaid situation.
Right.
Too bad. Bummer. It bums me out.
Yeah. If only.
If only. So this could be a portion of Enoch that is untrue, or at least at minimum, it should be viewed by us as a portion of Enoch that could be untrue.
I think Enoch could be untrue. Preserved popular oral tradition
right.
about many legendary aspects of the world that have been garbled through the generations in similar ways to many of the ancient mythologies. But Enoch did it because it was closer to some of the primary sources with greater purity than others, right. which is why I think the New Testament authors cite certain portions of it.
But not
all. But to be clear, none of us, we kid, but none of us are saying Enoch should be taken.
Yeah,
you know, word for word, yeah. A lot of it we would look at and go, Enoch, what was he? He was right. on some ayahuasca.
Right. So all that being said, one thing that Enoch says about, because you always think, okay, so the fallen angels, what happened to them? Right. Okay. Well, they tried to start a hybrid race, and that's where, you know, the Nephilim come from and the giants. And then, you know, those who engaged in this unholy union were locked in gloomy dungeons. We know what happened to the fallen angels.
Right.
What happened to their offspring, right? Their posterity. Well, first generation, that's the Nephilim. Think of like Hercules. I think Hercules was real. He's like a demigod, half yeah. god, lowercase g, fallen angel, and part man, and this kind of idea. And great men of renown with great inspired strength and Gilgamesh great size and Gilgamesh. Yeah. Totally, totally. And then their grandsons from the Nephilim on down, subsequent generations would be giants.
And
right?
So the
angelic
and
blood is now yeah. being diluted, but they're still of great size, the Rephaim, and yeah. and having different sizes, different clans, maybe even different skill sets and knowledge, or even supernatural abilities to heal. The Rephaim healer, as well as giant,
yeah.
at least knowledge, at least skill set. That's certainly plausible. But then the last thing that doesn't, it's what happened to the fallen angels? We got it. What happened to their children, Nephilim, their children's children, and so on, giants? We got it. But what about the women?
Well, Joel,
what about the women who married these fallen angels? What happened to them? Enoch has an answer.
Real quick, before we continue with the show, you need to be aware that you're merely watching one episode of what's actually a 10-part series covering all things under the banner of high strangeness. The 10 episodes include the following. Number one, the lost city of Atlantis has just recently been discovered. Episode number two, Hollow Earth, the last living dragons, and primary water. Episode number three, biblical giants, their clans, sizes, and supernatural abilities. Episode number four, mythological giants. Hercules was actually a Nephilim. Episode number five, everyone has been wrong about Bigfoot. Episode number six, fairies, the elemental spirits. Episode number seven, the biblical case for the existence of mermaids. Episode number eight, ghost. That's not your grandma. That's a demon. Episode number nine, witches, necromancy, and familiar spirits. And lastly, episode 10, angels, their classifications, physicality, and sexes. Now, all 10 of these episodes are available ad-free right now, exclusively on Patreon. These episodes are only dropping one at a time over a series of multiple weeks, but you can get them all available today, ad-free, plus the addition of two exclusive bonus episodes at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Again, it's exclusively found at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Go and check them out today. And now back to our program.
Well, what happened to them, according to Enoch,
right.
in this view that Joel claims, I believe, completely, and actually don't believe at all in any sense of the word, is that in engaging in this sexual relationship with the Watchers,
against nature,
they somehow gave up their soul to either be consumed or to be taken so that they were cursed to wander as long-lived but soulless sirens.
Sirens. And that's mermaids. What Enoch says. He says the women, the wives of the fallen angels who are the mothers of the Nephilim, grandmothers of the giants, and so on, they became, as they're cursed, sirens. And that the sirens were soulless, which is why they would want to draw men to themselves, yes. Men who are in, you know, who have souls. They're soulless. They have long lives, you know, longer lifespan than human beings. But when they die, they're done.
That's it.
They're
so
done.
They're trying to get Odysseus. He's lashed to the mast.
They're trying to get his seat.
And they're trying to get Odysseus and certain parts of Odysseus to come over so that they right. can hope to get back
That's right.
The soul.
This is
that's right.
A genesis of the succubus myth. And
so my point is that's just one more piece, and that one is less like everything. And I, you know, we're joking, but everything that we said before the siren part, like location of Atlantis.
Like
100%.
Get over yourself.
The location, I think, is pretty clear.
And and the Poseidon being a fallen angel, and then Atlas being a Nephilim. Look, like 100.
Don't take our word for it. Pause the video and go just type in Rakat structure on Google Images.
It's called the Rakat structure.
And you'll be like, oh, wow. It's about 52 miles east of the ocean, of the Atlantic Ocean.
Currently.
But clearly, the shoreline was much closer to it. And it's about 1,300 feet above sea level, but it sits on top of a band of cliffs that are at least 1,000 feet high that are much closer. And so a lot of people believe that the continental shelf, used to be those cliffs. And so then when the flood happened and the waters receded, they actually pulled the shoreline further back west.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so now it's much further away from the sea.
But that part of the Sahara Desert, it actually is somewhat near the sea.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredibly dry.
Mauritania is a coastal country.
Right. And even there's more. There's the Solon recorded the presence of elephants, that Atlantis was famous for elephants. Mauritania still has elephants. Hmm. There's evidence that there are elephants at that time as well, in terms of skeletons.
And, there's drawings on walls
and things like that. The rock colors, there's three specific rock colors that Solon records. All those colored rocks are
white, black, and red.
White, black, and red present in the area. Again, the exact diameter, the exact number of rings of land and water, the exact surrounding of the Atlas Mountains, the name of the first leader.
The outlet to the south.
The outlet to the south. The timeline fits pretty much,
and their timeline—they're going to try to team it up with an ice age catastrophic event
with the younger
like
Dryas.
11,000 to 12,000 years.
Yeah, the younger Dryas disasters is what they're going to try to.
And what we're going to say in terms of time, just so you know, from a biblical timeline, we're saying 6,500 years in a young Earth creationism idea from Adam to the flood. Noah and the flood is about 1,500 years, so that's about 4,500 years. In our past, so it's not that crazy. It's even from a biblical timeline, it's about half. They're saying something happened 11,000 years ago. We're saying 45 to 5,000 years ago. And you say it's ice over a long time. We're saying it's rushing water, lots of it over short time. And that changed even the seacoast, the waters, when they receded, when the waters pulled back, that the ocean actually ended up some miles away, but not that fantastic.
No.
Not that fantastic. And it's bone dry because of changes and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It all adds up. And then one last thing, just for the norming, and I would include myself in this, but I remember when I was doing my first research on Atlantis as, a 10-year-old boy, which was watching Michael J. Fox, Atlantis, the Disney movie. Right? Serious research.
Amazing.
Very serious. It's actually one of the
every
best.
Man
a lot of Disney is lousy, but that one.
To quest for Atlantis.
Yes, the lost city of Atlantis. Atlantis. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but I remember watching that and thinking Atlantis for a long time. I thought Atlantis is an underwater city. That's not the legend. The legend is it was a powerful city near the water, a port city that was engulfed.
And it was specifically it was judged by the gods.
Yes. And it was quickly.
Yeah, in a day.
It happened quickly.
So in a day. Flood.
Yep.
So in a day, it's engulfed by water. It wasn't built initially underwater. It's above water, but in a port kind of location, and it's judged, and particularly judged for being it's high technology, incredibly advanced. It's affluent and all these different things, but it's also wicked.
Yeah, it was judged for the reason that the whole world was judged in the flood, which is that the bloodshed of men knew no bounds.
Yeah, the evil of men had increased to such a degree that God regretted.
Mm. But it's
humanly
not
speaking,
it's not all dry at the current day Rakat structure.
No, it's not. In fact, there's one more detail here.
There's one more detail because Plato said there were two springs at the center of Atlantis. There was a bitter spring and there was a sweet spring. Hmm. Now, there's a lot of bitter springs in the area because there's a lot of salt water beneath the sand. But there's no sweet springs except for at the center of the Rakat structure. Joel?
Unbelievable.
They got primary water, baby.
Primary water.
They got water.
If you don't know about primary water, nobody cares.
You dullard.
Nobody cares because it doesn't sound as exciting. Like if you have a title of an episode, Atlantis, Bigfoot, Nephilim,
witches.
Giants, witches. But primary water is, if you're not primary water maxing, then
what are you doing?
What are you even doing?
You're wasting your life.
With you?
Primary water is
you
the
should be
key.
Ashamed.
It is the post-millennial great.
We're going to garden hope. The deserts and maybe Mars.
That's right.
Well, I was going to say, Mars. So, I mean, right now, the plan to fix the population issue,
right,
quote unquote.
The alleged overpopulation.
Yes, in Egypt, because the Nile's drying up.
Right.
And they have to help everybody who's going to thirst to death, is to create an inlet from the Mediterranean Sea that goes into, it's far east of the Rakat structure, but into the Sahara Desert. Mm-hmm. It would be a big lake, like the fifth largest lake in the world by surface area. And then have people go there when it's been, when the ground's been made more fertile by all of the new water. But my question is, why don't we just revive Atlantis?
Why don't we drill primary water
and
wells?
And say, hey, right. Poseidon, you fallen watcher, and Atlas, you demon spirit. Like, this is just ours now.
Up to date, scientists have thought that all we have is, one, that water's finite and it's scarce and it's running out. We only have so much and it can never be remade. And then second, not only do we have finite amount of water, but we have old water. And what I mean by that is the hydrological cycle, this idea of, of water evaporating, going up and forming clouds and raining and coming back down, that all of your water is recycled water from, thousands of years old. Even a young Earth model, you'd be saying you're drinking 6,000-year-old water. And yeah, you can have your reverse osmosis, filter, which I have, and those things matter. And yes, you can maybe get out some of the chemicals from plastics and human corruption and pollution and those kinds of things. But there's still just rock formations and certain minerals and certain salts that over 6,000 years, if it's only recycled water, a finite amount, and it's the same water there's been since the beginning, and it's flowing over, under the ground and over the ground and over mountains and through rocks.
Got a bunch of pee in it.
It's picking stuff up. And yes, you do your best to purify it. But the point is, the hydrological cycle tells us two things, that there's not enough water, it's finite, but it's also old water. Mm. Primary water theory suggests that, number one, water is not finite, but it's actually being made deep underneath the ground through pressures and seismic shifts and all these different things that hydrogen, oxygen are actually, that water is actually being made. It's a renewable resource. And then two, so it's not finite because we're actually gaining more water every day. Number two, we don't just have more water than we think, but we have new water. Mm. Instead of water that's 6,000 years old, you have new water that was made just last year. And if there would be a way, as technology increased, to drill down, we're not just saying a few hundred feet, you're going to have to really get down there. But if you could drill down and be able to actually mine primary water straight up, not only could you, is it a massive amount under surface oceans, we're not talking about puddles, oceans, just far down, you could... You could eradicate deserts. Every place in the world could be rainforest, basically. And as it pertains to human beings, this is just one other application, but it could be the secret without medicine that has been corrupt, not all medicine, but lots of medicine. It's just a trade. It's like, hey, we'll fix your... we'll fix this, your cancer problem, but we'll give you this other disease, instead of medicine that maybe heals your sickness there, but creates another problem there. It'll fix your heart, but ruin your liver. This would be, what if the trick to lengthening human lifespans, like Isaiah 65, this is before the final return of Christ, because people are still dying, but it says the youth will die at 100, meaning that 100 would be, that dude was young. Mm. And what if the way to elongate lifespans is not by some of the corrupt medicine that we do today, but actual natural solutions that God baked into the pie, the world that he made, we just haven't reached it yet. And what if the drop-off in lifespans that you see in the biblical narrative, they get shorter and shorter and shorter, is because the water is getting older and older and older. But if we could get new water,
I want to call
below
this
the surface,
the Joel Webbin Fountain of Youth theory.
It's the Fountain of Youth, not in a specific locale, but it's actually worldwide.
And the other thing,
you just have to be able to
access the Fountain of Couth.
I just want somebody to look at me the way Joel Webbin looks at primary water.
You know that I do.
Nothing gets Joel Webbin more amped than primary water.
It's exciting.
Because we did a whole episode for about an hour and a half on primary water.
And I
get the sense right now, Joel's ready to do round two.
But that's it. That was round two. I'm done. That's all I'll say. go check out the other
episode. Well, no, it is compelling, though, that you had this...
It's so wild.
Antediluvian city that's just, at this point, it's just confirmed. I have literally zero doubt
is the Rikat structure. Yeah,
that is Atlantis.
Yes, and it was a pre-flood society ruled by a Nephilim, and they had, maybe, a primary water spring at the center.
Right.
And they all lived for a very long time.
Right.
So I don't know.
That's it.
Look, there really could be something to it.
You say, I don't know.
You do know.
Well, I say I don't know in the sense of like, so of course I know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But you do.
It's like when someone says, no, it means no.
Yeah, no.
When
someone says, believe.
No, yeah, it means no, yeah.
Yeah.
It
means yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a yes.
That's right. Bro, we're so back. We've never been more so back right now because we just figured out where Atlantis is, the secret to lengthening lifespans and
beautifying the earth.
And also a kingdom that's going to be reclaimed by Christendom.
And it's
going to
be named
with its former glory, but better and holy.
Yes.
And honoring Jesus.
Numenor is not going to fall.
It's new Numenor.
It's not going to be a Caliban.
It's like New York. New Numenor.
Numenor.
Yeah, except like...
And we're understanding, in all this, we were able to understand Atlantis, primary water, a little bit of Hollow Earth theory, the re-beautification of the world, getting lifespans lengthened again with a fulfillment of Isaiah 65, understanding Nephilim, understanding giants, and we arrived at a perfect biblical understanding of mermaids.
Now, and can I add one more thing? I was just going to say.
You guys didn't even appreciate the joke. I said, and we got mermaids.
We figured mermaids out, allegedly.
I was busy thinking about what I was going to say instead of listening. I'm sorry.
I want to also just say and posit that Atlantis is not the only such city in the ancient world.
Yes.
Were you about to say the same thing?
I was literally about to say the same thing.
Well, it's because we are the same person.
Right. Yeah.
So
you're wearing the same jacket, same shirt. It's same honestly pants. A little uncomfortable.
Yeah. There are
I feel like I should sit in between you just
a lot of people.
A lot of people think that we're brothers too.
Yeah. We are in Christ.
But we're not.
But I do think if you look at the record, you can go all around the world and you're going to find, especially antediluvian, in my view,
before the flood,
as well as you'll find other, you know, echoes throughout history after that. But this isn't a tale that just happened there in the Sahara,
right?
In Atlantis, this happened in cities and empires all around the world. In fact, it's one of the reasons that I so appreciate N.D. Wilson's Ashtown Burial series, which is a fictional story, but it includes many of these cast of characters in his story. Calls them transmortals, but he brings in many of these ancient figures like Nimrod. Gilgamesh.
He brings these in,
and tells the story of everything from the Aztecs to the ancient Atlanteans and beyond. That many places in history, just like we talked about in our Patreon exclusive, the ayahuasca psychedelics episode.
Join Patreon.
Go check that out.
Our Patreon, and you'll be able to see a whole thing on DMT.
What we're seeing there is that human beings in this time period. And it still happens in many senses, but they were communing with ancient evil powers, spiritual powers, and they were doing real things on earth with that power in ruling and enslaving worlds and empires, but they were fallen and wicked empires,
right?
Like the Empire of Babylon and Assyria and Egypt.
Right.
These are not good men. These are wicked men. And we see partly not just the sin of, it's not just the flesh, it's also the devil.
Yes, morally depraved in terms of human nature having fallen, but also demonic influence. Yeah. Morally depraved, on the moral level, depraved. But in terms of innovation, technology, advancement, sophistication, these things, it's not just like, oh, wow. Because sometimes you say it in a way that's it's patronizing when you're speaking of the ancients and those who came before. It's like, look at them. These people figured out the wheel. Wow.
Aqueducts.
Yeah. Wow. They were very developed.
Oh, you made a bow and arrow.
But when we say developed, and this is what I think, like somebody like Graham, what's his
Graham
last name?
Graham Hancock in Ancient Apocalypse.
I think he gets this
apocalypse.
Right. He cannot help but be just enough wrong to ensure that he can keep rejecting the Bible.
He hates Christianity.
Because he hates Christianity. He needs Jesus. But in every, he'll be so consistent, and then he forces himself to be inconsistent to deny Christ.
Yeah, he doesn't stick the landing.
But other than that, in every other instance, he's right. And one of the things that, he's been scorned and mocked about is that he believes that previous civilization, he's not just saying, oh, there were people a long time ago. What makes him unique, right? Because everybody says that. What makes him unique is he's saying two main things, as I understand it, that there were people a long time ago, and that some of these people, ancient, even further back. So there were people hundreds of years back who actually were primitive, but then there were people thousands of years back, and they actually get, as you go further back, they get more sophisticated.
In his view, this is like 20,000 years.
Yes. And in our view, we would be saying what he says is more primitive in the more recent past, we would put that at 2,000 years, 3,000 years. And then what he says is very sophisticated at 20,000 years, we would put that more at like 5,000 years before the flood. And we'd say because of fallen angels giving knowledge and giving that they were highly sophisticated, incredible technology. So these civilizations like Atlantis, like, and even after the flood, like Babel and, these kind of-
And Yanaguni.
Yanaguni, Tranis. Yes.
Yeah, incredibly sophisticated, but lasting before the flood, not just sophisticated, but also people think we have 8 billion people, give or take, right now on the planet. There are some guys who have put, and I think this is absolutely plausible, guys who have put the total world population at the time of the flood at 11 billion.
Wow.
When you think, and I'm not saying it has to be that, but when you think of elongated lifespans, when you think Adam lived over 900 years, how many, he had Cain, he had Abel, he had Seth, and the Bible says, and then, Adam and Eve had other sons and daughters. Now you think, maybe they had another 2 or 3 kids or 200 or 300. With that kind of lifespan, that kind of fertility.
Can you imagine remembering birthdays?
Right. And that's just one generation. And then all of them, how many kids do they have? And they're all living this long. Nobody's dying, or very few are dying. And so it's absolutely possible that you have billions, maybe not that exact, 11, but you could have hundreds of millions, maybe a couple billion on the planet at that time, but then also influenced and taught and tutelaged by fallen angels with their knowledge. You have Atlantis could have been incredible.
The word soap makes Christian soap. What makes our soap Christian? First and foremost, it is because our soap is good soap, made exclusively from natural and organic ingredients. In addition to making a good product, we also promote a good message. Our bottles of soap aren't wrapped in heretical garbage. They're wrapped in sound doctrine and the infallible truth of Scripture. Lastly, we have a good mission. At The Word Soap, 10% of all our profits go directly to the godly men and women at Abolitionist Rising who are fighting to protect the lives of unborn children. Our product is pure, our message is true, and our mission is pleasing to Christ. So join us. Visit thewordsoap.com today. Again, that's thewordsoap.com. Everyone needs soap, so wash yourself in the Word.
Are you a Christian struggling to find companies that align with your values and beliefs? Well, then Squirrely Joe's has you covered for all your coffee needs. All of their coffee is hand-selected and roasted fresh every day by a family of fellow believers. Try them out and you'll savor exceptional coffee while knowing that your investment supports a company committed to following God's teachings and upholding truth and righteousness, ensuring that your hard-earned money contributes to the growth of God's kingdom. Stop giving your hard-earned dollars to pagans who support evil. Right Response listeners have access to an exclusive deal. Your first bag of coffee is free. All you have to do is cover the shipping. So head on over to squirrelyjoes.com/rightresponse. Again, that's squirrelyjoes.com/rightresponse to claim your first free bag of coffee today.
Even if you take away the fallen angels, you have Adam, who wasn't always fallen.
Right.
He actually experienced righteousness and holiness in a state of innocence before God. For, well, according to Dante, what is it, like 7 minutes or something?
Some guys say he fell on the eighth day.
Yeah, but Milton gave them quite a while. But anyway, the point is, he was probably quite intelligent. He probably understood nature very, very well. Mm. And so even if you take away the fallen angel aspect of it, I think that even the line of Seth was probably highly advanced. I think that Noah, in his capability of building that ark, of course he was helped along by God, but also he built the ark, which is an astonishing feat given that time. So I think the conclusion that pre-flood, right before the flood, human society was very large and was very advanced is unavoidable. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we no longer see quite that, like, you know, skyrocket of advancement, because we don't have any covenant head that was innocent at one time.
Right.
And we have all of that technology lost. They're having to restart all over again. And then you also have the demons now that are being much more prohibitive. Like they're wanting to kill. They're wanting to kill and take away the image of God. They're right. not as much wanting to share gifts that will cause flourishing, at least not for as long a time, I think.
Right.
That's very speculative. But to me, it seems like an almost unavoidable conclusion, at least in terms of antediluvian society being very advanced right before the flood comes.
Right. But you do still have some societies post-flood, like Babel, that mm-hmm. are still advanced, technologically advanced. So it's not that it all happens before the flood. But what happened before the flood, I think, is if we could see the world before the flood, you'd be seeing giants, dragons, as far as we know,
the pyramids. There could have been
electricity.
Technologically advanced civilization on some level.
Incredible.
Egyptians watching like light shows on
large cities. Yeah. Interesting.
And with the possibility of technologies that are capable of moving 200 ton blocks, mm-hmm. hundreds of miles up thousands of feet. These are the kinds of things that we can guess, but we can't really fathom.
Right. Giants answers part of that question. Like, what if they were just big people in terms of megaliths? But also, I don't think it was just big people.
No.
And I don't think it was less than that.
No,
I'm a giant fan.
I think it was insane.
And I think some of these giants were 30, as you'll have to watch a giant episode, and we'll account for why we think this. But I think some of these giants were 30, 40, 50, even 60 feet tall. But it's the technology. We think they were incredibly advanced to be able to
build some of these things. I saw this insane video one time. And I can't remember the name of the pyramid, but it's one of the lesser pyramids in Egypt that's far away from the Great Pyramid, more into the desert. And this is somewhat recent, like in the last couple decades. They found a tunnel that went down underneath it, and they got in there, and they found this massive room. It was a great room with pillars holding it up that was just lined all the way with granite bowls. Like big bowls. The name escapes me of what like a big bowl is.
Basin,
I guess. But
based
one of those tall ones, you know,
bowls.
They're like, now you'd turn it on a like a potter's wheel and you'd shoot it up or whatever. Anyway, these are made of granite.
A pit. Go ahead.
But so that's already impressive that they have these type of bowls made of granite.
Granite.
But then also they measured how flat the tops were, the top rim. Which, you know, there's about a 3-inch wide rim on the top. Okay. And it was perfectly flat in reference to itself within like 0.02 microns. We can't do that today. And this isn't just one of them.
And when you say we can't do it today, you're not just talking about by hand. You mean with machines.
We don't have the precision. We can't guarantee a tolerance within 0.02 microns. We can't do that.
Wow.
Maybe if you have the highest quality a CNC machine in the world, but it's really hard to do with granite because of its crystalline structure. It's not as predictable. So
Ben used to be an engineer.
Yeah, I did. I was an engineer by trade. People had.
So he can say those things. If you hear me saying it, you can just say BS. But if Ben's saying it.
It means one of us saw it on Twitter. But
these people had an unbelievable ability to machine stone in a way that not only rivals, but usually exceeds our capability of machining aluminum today.
Wow.
That's astonishing. That's almost more impressive to me than the pyramid that they were underneath.
That sounds like a fallen angel father.
That's what I'm saying.
Told you how to do something.
Like some kind of great skill set that was passed along with a technology that we can't imagine.
Right, the fallen angel father, but also you are right, because I don't want to discount your other, like, think 900 years to perfect your craft.
Right.
You're Adam.
Right.
And you knew the world before it was fallen.
Right.
I mean, that, like, Adam, people think of Adam as like a great grandpa who's walking around. Like, Adam was a king.
Yeah.
Adam, I mean, everybody comes from him. So he's related to everybody. So he's got great, 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 great grandchildren, but it's not just like, hey, great, great grandpa. It's King Adam. They bow if they get to see Adam. Like,
so cool.
Because he's walked with God. it's amazing to think of that antediluvian world with giants and dragons and maybe mermaids.
It's so different that
probably mermaids, but honestly, let's be honest, they're fairies, and you'll have to watch the fairy episode.
Mermaids in some way.
Yeah.
I think mermaids would be in the category of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Like a fairy type thing.
That's where I would lean. I think that mermaids are real.
Which is a particular kind of demon, an elemental spirit kind of.
I'm calling them element angles or element angels.
Elemental. Calling them elemental angels, like in a class of angelic angels. Being that is focused on the operations of nature.
Right.
Boom.
Would have been a class. Right. A
so they're kind of preternatural. Yeah. They have one foot in, one foot out of the seen realm.
Episode did we hit that on too? I think our angels episode, but then also our fairies.
We hit it real hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we dabbled in the Bigfoot episode.
We cruised.
I think it's worth noting that I think it's First Peter. Peter, like the antediluvian world is so different. Peter calls it the world that then was.
Yeah.
Because the flood was not just a catastrophe. The flood was a decreation event followed by a recreation event.
Right.
It is such a catastrophic event.
It was a different world that
existed at that time.
Right.
Wow.
Right. A baptism of the world.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is what you need to do. One, you can become a Patreon, check out, two or three extra bonus episodes that we've recorded. Two, you need to go over to Haunted Cosmos, subscribe, click the bell, and check out their content. And three, every single quarter, right? So this is Q2 of 2024, the year of our Lord. But every quarter, on Fridays at 4 p.m. Central Time, we have on both YouTube and Twitter and all our platforms, the Friday special. And so for Q2, we're doing Brian and Ben, Haunted Cosmos, 10 episodes. Mm. Q3, we're going to have other notable guests that I fly in, and it's going to be interesting conversations. Can I promise it'll be Atlantis interesting?
I don't know. I can't. It's tough to beat that.
That's just tough to beat. It'll be great.
It's kind of cheating that Haunted Cosmos, like when this comes out, April?
It'll be April through June.
Right around, so we're going to be dropping season 3 of Haunted Cosmos. Great. Which are 10 episode seasons. And we're opening with things like Missing 411, Fairies,
Ocean Mysteries.
Ocean Mysteries 2.0.
I'm going to say it right now. We're doing a whole episode in season 3 on different Atlantis type myths.
That's right.
From around the world to see just how common of a trope this really is.
Right.
And potentially how widespread this same situation was.
So it's kind of cheating for other topics to try and be as interesting. We don't even have to be that interesting, me and Ben, because we're talking about Atlantis.
It's the greatest topic of all.
And the Bermuda Triangle. Dream. Like things every young 8-year-old boy is watching those shows on Discovery Channel or the Travel Channel, and they're like, the Bermuda Triangle is going to be a big problem in my life.
No one's found Atlantis yet.
I'm going to find Atlantis.
That's right.
And I did.
I
found it.
Dream come true.
I didn't take it from another YouTube.
The royal you that includes me.
You did take it.
The point is,
subscribe to our channel, hit the bell with the right response. Also go over to Haunted Cosmos, subscribe, hit the bell, follow us, follow them. And if you love the collab, if you liked it, then the solution to that problem is that, Q3, I'm going to have somebody else. Q4, probably have somebody else. But Q5.
Hey.
Q6, we'll have them back.
Share it with all your friends so that Joel invites us back.
Is there a six-quartered year?
No.
Doesn't even matter.
You're right.
I know
what
you're
saying. But you get the point. You get
the royal quarter. Q1 2025.
Well, Q would also be Quinn, not just Quinn. Court.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
so
there is a Q5, actually.
All right.
That's why I abbreviated it.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. God bless. We hope it's been helpful and enjoyable. The world is not just stuff. We live in God's magical world.
So true.
And it matters. Real quick, right here at the end, I just wanted to remind you to become a member at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Exclusively for our Patreon members, we have all 10 episodes, early access, ad-free. Some of my favorite episodes to be looking forward to is episodes that deal with Bigfoot or fairies or ghosts or angels or giants, or particularly our episode on witches. If you want to watch these episodes now, and you want to watch them without any ads, then you've got to join us by becoming a member at patreon.com/rightresponseministries.